Good evening and welcome to Dr. Jeanette's first inaugural talk show on Blog Talk Radio. Tonight's topic will be hurricane preparation, before and after the hurricane. Life Pockets came out of being when Dr. Jeanette went through Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans. Her experiences give her an insight into what you need in order to prepare for a hurricane or a natural disaster and how to survive afterwards. So welcome to the show, and I'll turn it over to Dr. J.
Hello. Hi.
Hi, Dr. Jeanette. So why don't you tell everybody that's on how Life Pockets came to be?
When we evacuated for Katrina, so many people, including ourselves, we would be walking around Houston just looking at people trying to see if anyone would comfort us or be able to talk to us or wanted to know our story, because we obviously looked very scattered and like something was really going on with us. But instead we found a lot of the Texans just kind of drifted away from us. We went in the into a hotel. There were a lot of people there that were also evacuated, but they were kind of in their own set of chaos. But then we go to a restaurant, nobody really wanted to talk to us. Life Pockets is more for just being able to let people know if you're falling through the cracks or someone doesn't want to hear your story or just not even offering compassion or caring. That is what Life Pockets is here for.
So when you said that you rode Hurricane Katrina at, you actually stayed during the hurricane. Explain how that came to be.
Yes, I was in... spent the entire week before Katrina in the car doing some medical work over the entire state, driving all day long. And by the time it came to Saturday before Katrina, I was starting to have a lot of pain in my legs. And I really didn't know what to do, and we were busy getting ready and what we were going to do and where we were going to go and everything, so I didn't pay much attention. But around Saturday evening, I just simply could not stand up and had tremendous pain in my legs, so I went to the emergency room, our local Kenner Regional Hospital here, and I was feeling like I had a blood clot in my leg, and I knew that because I've had it before. So we stayed there for several hours, probably about 12 hours, until someone came to check my leg, and they were getting ready to evacuate the patients, and they told us you had two choices. You can go upstairs in lockdown, or you can leave. We chose to leave, and by the time we got home, there was no time to evacuate. So we stayed in Kenner for 4 days after the storm, through the storm and after the storm.
Interesting. Let's give everybody an insight into why we refer to you as Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. Dr. Gallagher is a naturopath who came from Arizona here. So when she realized that, you know, what was going on with the medical condition in her leg, she knew that there was an issue. So that's why you sought medical attention for that, correct?
Correct. I would see patients in Arizona. I went to Southwest College of Naturopathic Medicine, and I saw patients there for about 4 years before coming back to New Orleans. And I came back here because I was also a graduate of Loyola University as a dental hygienist. And when I came back, I just really tried to start helping the people here. I thought, fabulous state. They could use a lot of help, possibly to direct, you know, themselves in eating better or changing some of their habits or just making little tiny changes that would make their life a little bit easier and not have to have so many medications and serious medical conditions. But I found that very much resistant, so I'm with the medical community. So that lasted for about 9 months, and then Hurricane Katrina came.
And basically you felt that the people of the state needed your services because of how you go about conducting your experiences and how you go about treating your patient as far as being compassionate and talking to the patient and finding out exactly what's taking place versus, you know, here's a pill and we'll see you later.
Right. I think since I grew up that way, all of the time we lived in the Northeast where a lot of the Amish people lived, and we grew up with fresh food and fresh dairy and a butcher. And I just wasn't privy to a lot of fast foods or, you know, fried foods, different things like that. So when I would just always listen to the people. That was my choice. And I've been doing that for about 30 years now. In all different types of professions I've had, I've, you know, been a dental hygienist, I've been a doctor, I've done a lot of things. And I just really could listen and see the patient's pain, and it was like no one was really listening to them. I can even remember an instance in clinic where I was sitting next to a woman, and she was telling her story, and she was visibly just in a lot of pain. And I set my hand on her shoulder, and I was told, don't ever do that. Take anyone's pain away. Well, that's another reason why I did Life Pockets, is because people need a lot of comforting. And even now with the Storm Irene, there's going to be a lot of different types of people, a lot of different walks of life, or whatever you want to call it, the haves, the have-nots, or whatever it is. But there's going to be a lot of people in a very small area having a lot of different emotions. When hurricanes happen, it's not just the water waves, it's waves of emotions. They feel lost, they feel scared, they don't know what to do. It's unforeseen territory. They don't know if they're going to go back and something's going to be there or something's not going to be there. So that's what Life Pockets is all about.
And that's basically just, you know, helping people through their everyday existence. Somebody to talk to, the medical personnel and the emergency personnel and basically everyone in the medical field or busy, you know, doing what they do. And Life Pockets is an avenue for people to seek help as far as conversation, somebody to talk to, you know, and get an outsider's point of view as to how to make it through the day or what, and through your experiences, basically, you know, what you will need to be aware of if you do come back to an area that sustained a natural disaster. There'll be no services. There'll be no electricity. There'll be no running water. There'll be no grocery stores. So through your experiences and going through Katrina, along with a lot of other people that went through Katrina, you have a very insightful way of dealing with the aftermath.
Yes, when we came back from Katrina, we were gone for 3 to 4 weeks. We stayed in Texas. But when we came back, we figured everything would be okay, just like when we left it. And when we came back, we left right in the end of the very storm when there was so much water and there was a lot of chaos. We would hear a lot of gunshots in our area. The water was very, very high. It was a very bad color. It was extremely hot. There was no air conditioning. There were no services. Nobody was coming to help you. And right now with Irene, a lot of people think that they're just going to go wherever they're going, have a few days off, and come back. But I can tell you from experience, a lot of people with Katrina thought that also. They went out, they went to Florida for 1 or 2 weeks, and they thought they'd be back and everything would be hunky-dory. Well, some of those people never came back. So there's a lot of people still living in different areas because it was much easier to live there and they didn't want to face what was here. And
those that did come back, they found it very, very difficult to navigate without what they've come accustomed to, everyday things, grocery stores, gas stations, banks, contact with other people. It was a totally different way of doing things and a way of going about your day-to-day existence without all of those services.
Right. I think the biggest thing was that when we came back, we were looking all over for a grocery store because we needed some food. And there was our local Winn-Dixie was just one block away from our house. And, of course, it was devastated, so it was just ripped down to the ground, along with all the other shops and gas stations and all the other banks and everything around us. But when we did find a grocery store, it happened to be the same lady from this grocery store we always went to, and she just said she needed to work, and they brought her down there. And it was the only grocery store for over 20 or 30 miles that was open. Everybody was going there. And the most interesting thing to me was the first day I walked in, was the shelves, over 90% of them were empty. Barely anything there. And what was there, when you got it home, it had bugs and stuff in it, and it was very hot. And the cans, you could tell that they weren't kept in a really cool storage. They probably just put out whatever stock wasn't damaged and put it right back on the shelves. But I noticed one thing, and this is, I guess, coming from the caring and compassion part again. I love to walk into a grocery store and hear the radio and start there singing, and then you could see people walking down the aisles dancing in our local store. It's so funny to watch, especially the women that are over like 50 and 60. But at that new store, it was solemn. There was not one sound. No one was talking. There was no radio. There were no supplies. It was just like a big shell with a few things on the shelves, and almost everybody had to pay with food stamps because there just was no money.
Well, being no money with no access to banks or anything else, people basically had to depend on what cash they had readily available, correct, versus being able to go to the local ATM.
Right. Also, if you have a bank that's a small bank in your local area and you and that bank is devastated, don't think that they're just online and they could pop you back up if you go to another state. They will not be able to access that bank's records for several weeks in some instances, and some of the banks even lost that information. But if you, like, we had a Chase in Kenner, Louisiana, but we went to Texas and we got a Chase account there. Well, you would think that Chase talks to Chase, but Chase doesn't talk to each other in each other states. But they were able to draw some information. But when we came back, they said, you have to close your Chase in Texas. And we really thought that that would not be an issue, but it was an issue. And when you do have money, it's going to be very, very limited because things have gotten so expensive. If you come back and, you know, you want a bottle of water where it's normally like maybe $1, $1.50, that could generally cost you $3 on up, or there'll be no water. And ice, food, very hard at a premium to get. Mostly everything that you would pay for, they would ask you for cash because they couldn't run any ATM cards, they couldn't run any credit cards. So if you've got cash, you need to keep your cash on you. And if you're able to get into some other systems, almost everybody that evacuated was given food stamps automatically. They were also, if they had insurance, they got a temporary check from their insurance company, so they did have money. Gas is at a premium. People were stealing the gas cans out of the backs of trucks. If they saw something inside the cars, they were stealing cars. You know, when you take a population of a couple hundred thousand people and you turn around and put them all in a section of maybe 50 miles, all those people together, mingling together, find ways of opportunist that can go and just do a lot of crimes that they shouldn't be doing.
So, basically, what you found, not everyone was prepared for Hurricane Katrina, which everybody knows. I'm sure everybody that watched it on television and listened to it and also went through it, there was really no way of actually really preparing, and no one really understood the devastation afterwards. Let's talk about how people should prepare for an upcoming storm when they do have the ability to make preparations. What should they really look at as far as preparing for?
First thing you need to do is find out who you're going to be responsible for. If I'm just responsible for myself, my husband, and my children, that's fine. But when your mother-in-law and your mother and their sister and your brother want to show up a day before evacuation or wanting to stay at your house, that really doesn't work. So everybody needs to really talk and have a plan. Once you have that plan, then you'll be able to all work together and have everybody do different things if they're all going to stay together. If you're staying in the house, you really have to know a lot of things. Is it safe? Is the insurance up to date? Has this house ever flooded before? Have there ever been any leaks in the house? Everybody always tells you put everything in your refrigerator, fill it up, and you'll do just fine. Just don't open it too many times. Well, if you live in the southern states, you could turn around and within 24 hours, everything in your refrigerator is baked, and then you never open it again. And, you know, that's a lot of money that you may have spent, and it's not something you could just put in an ice chest. When the electricity goes out, everything heats up.
So basically, if in preparation for a hurricane, you know, people should, one, if they are leaving and they are evacuating, they should empty the refrigerator and unplug the refrigerator. That way, when they come back, the refrigerator's clean.
Right, because after Katrina, nobody emptied the refrigerators or freezers, and everyone's refrigerator and freezer was out on the side of the street to be thrown out because none of them can be saved. If you have food in there, especially meat and especially dairy products, over 24, 48, you know, 72 hours, you have to throw it away. You can't save it. So if you're leaving for a mild storm or moderate storm like Irene is seeming to be, you would really definitely want to get all that dairy and stuff out of your refrigerator and possibly hope for the best in the freezer. But if not, you may have a refrigerator by the fourth or fifth day that's going to be out in the street. And there are not truckloads of refrigerators coming into your area. You may be doing without one for several weeks, possibly months.
How did you survive after Katrina without having those luxuries?
There, down in, it would be about every mile or 2 miles, the National Guard was there with ice and water, and you got one bag of ice per family, and you got one case of water per family. That was all you were allowed at per day. And then because you were sitting in the line usually for 3 or 4 hours anyway, so it's not like you had time to be going to 3 or 4 different places, and there was no gas in abundance, so you really didn't have the money or the way to get gas. You could spend a whole entire day just going to get water, ice, and gas. What we did was find some place to eat one meal a day, possibly at a side restaurant or some place where they were just handing out food. And then the other meal, we would either, the Red Cross trucks were all the time. If anybody donates, they want to donate to Red Cross. They never left. They were always here. When one truck was empty, another one would show up. They would give you, ask you how many did you need. And if you said 2 or 3, my husband was standing next to me, the lady would say, oh, no, he could use more, and she'd give you 2 more. You know, you'd go away with 5. And there would always be something fresh in there, like an orange or some vitamin C substance. So the Red Cross was the second meal of the day.
Interesting, interesting.
We have a caller. Why don't we try to see who this is and
sure.
offer some help. Go ahead. What is your name? Caller?
Hello,
John.
Are you there? Hey, John. Where are you calling from? I see it's 504.
At New Orleans.
In New Orleans. Okay, and do you have a question for Dr. Jeanette?
Yeah, I wasn't here during Katrina, but I was curious, how long did it take the water to drain out from the flooded areas? Was everything flooded for days, or did it go away in a day or two, or what?
Well, when we stayed in Kenner, we were here for the 4 days, and the water was going nowhere. It did not move, not one inch. In fact, it seemed to be that it might have risen a little bit after that. So if it didn't go down in 4 days, we were leaving, and it took, they told us, about 2 weeks to leave our area. But in New Orleans East, where other homes were up to the rooftops, that took at least 3 to 4 weeks to actually have that water go down, and no one was allowed in to see it because they had to actually pump it out, and there weren't people here to do it. There were no pumps in the first place. Then you needed people to be able to do the pumping out. Then you needed to have them access to that area to figure out how to do it. So it's not just like, oh, let's go pump out the water today and we're going to walk over and it's going to work. It's a very long, drawn-out process, and then you have to get money to pay the people to do it, and then the government has to ask for it. So a manage of being able to take out 4 or 5 feet of water out of Kenner could take you 2 to 3 weeks.
So in an area that, like New York City right now, that is a pretty low-lying area and, you know, has a lot of fill that the island is based on right now. So you're saying that places like the subways that have been shut down, if they flood, they may have to actually take weeks to pump that water out before anybody can actually go down there and use them again?
Yeah, it's probably even take longer than that because you're going to have people who don't belong. You have to assess the area first. So right as soon as the storm stops, all of the National Guard and the local authorities will be going in to assess the area. There's a lot of people, if there's a lot of flooding, that did not leave. First, you have to attain it to be safe. That means getting out animals and people. That's the first job. The second is to do for fires and electricity. And then the third is to assess where the water is. That right there can take days or weeks, depending on the severity.
Okay. What are your thoughts for people? What would you tell the people in the New York area, Washington area? North Carolina has been through some storms before. They have a little bit of a better understanding, but for the Upper Eastern Seaboard, what kind of advice could you give them as we wind down as far as what to expect if this storm turns out to really, you know, put some water in their areas?
Probably the first thing to do is to just sit down and calm down, because a lot of people go crazy after the storm. They think they're going to go out there, oh, I have gas in my cans, and we're going to go out and we're going to rip all these things out, and we're going to cut all those trees down, and you know, and then I'm going to send my wife to the grocery store after the tree is cut down in my yard. Well, your wife may use the last bit of gas that's in your car, and she may be calling you because she can't walk back from the store that wasn't open in the first place. So really, it's a lot of sit down, calm down, wait at least 12 hours after the storm to be able to have things assessed. If you run out and do that, let's say there's pretty severe, moderate to severe damage, you may be, let's say your wife again goes out after your husband cleaned it. You know, those children, if they're with the wife, they may be coming across some things that are just so inappropriate for children to be able to see that it's just not a place for kids. And really, if you can send your kids out, if there's moderate or severe damage, send them to a relative somewhere else outside the area. That is the best thing for them, because the stress every day getting up and not being able to do their normal routine, it will be just too much to bear. Usually adults can do that. And then if you have elderly family members, those would be the next ones to go. So it would be children first, elderly second. And if you have medical compromised, those should have been out before the storm in the first place.
So, in other words, what you're saying is after Irene passes, it's best for those who did stay to at least allow the emergency people to make their assessments, make sure you listen to the emergency radio stations, and if you're lucky to have a television or a station that's up and running, to listen to the reports and let them dictate whether or not it's safe for you to go and move about your immediate area.
Once you start moving about, if things are still falling down or if there's a lot of water there, that water, any type of flood water anywhere, if it's more than up to your knees when you're standing there at any time, everything from underneath is now in that water. If there was a hospital down the street, all of their waste is in your water. If there was a dog kennel down the street, all that waste is in your water. If there are sewers underneath the street, all of that has come up. There's nowhere else for that to go. It's just, you know, if you make a little puddle with mud and you put more water in it, it's all got to go in the same spot. There's nowhere else for it to go. So all of that water that's coming down in rain or going in from the ocean, one's regular water, one's salt water, but then you turn around and you have all of this mixed up of all of these other components that really are nasty. So going out in the water is an absolute no. If you have to get from one place to another and they're bringing a boat for you, or if the evacuation team comes to get you, the first thing to do is make sure you have really big, heavy-duty leaf garbage bags and put those on your legs, one in each, and walk out in that. Do not get your feet in it. A lot of water this year has had a lot of amoeba bacteria. People are dying from those crazy bacteria. People are very sick from a lot of staph infections that happen after storms. Look what happened in Joplin. They had the fungus, and, you know, nobody even knows that. So best thing to do is take your own precautions and do not, absolutely do not go out in any type of water at all.
For those listeners that are listening and have tuned in, how can they get more information on you?
You can go to my website, which is www.lifepockets.com. I also have a blog that's associated with that website. You just have to push blog on the homepage. You can also Google my name, Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and there's a lot of information there. And I also have two books that I've already published. They are on the side of the blog. One is for hurricane, surviving a new reality in hurricane and natural disasters. The other is shelters, you know, what you can expect when you go to a shelter. A lot of people that are in shelters now, and if they get a lot of damage and there's nowhere for them to go or stay afterwards, they'll be in those shelters for several days. And if you're not prepared for a shelter, it's, you really need to be prepared for a shelter. You need to know what to do and what not to do and what to bring and what not to bring. So we also have that shelter book.
Okay, that's good information for those people who are listening. Let's talk about, if you could, there's been a lot of stuff on the television and all the news stations that, you know, a lot of the people were saying too much hoopla was being made over Irene. Give them a for instance to where they should really adhere the warnings, because you really cannot predict what Mother Nature is going to do, even if it is just a Category 2 storm.
If you were told to get out and you did not get out, you are, when they come to get you, you are going where they put you. You don't have a choice. Oh, give me an airplane ticket, I'm going to go to my sister's in China. You are going to a shelter on a bus where they tell you to go, with nothing to carry with you except your identification, because if there's five other people in that boat, there's no room for your stuff. So your stuff stays behind. And if they tell you to go, you need to be gone. If you have a chance to go, you need to go, because then you are out of the way to be able, it's sort of like just peeling the layers of the onion. If you can go first, if you have an option, go. If you have other people you need to take care of, put them all together, and then everybody leave. Then if you absolutely have to stay, you call the state, the 311 number, and they will find arrangements to get you out of there. If you have absolutely no means whatsoever, you find someone, find a policeman, find somebody in local government, call Catholic Charities, call all these different places around, and they'll find some place for you to go. If you're medically compromised, you call your doctor, you call the hospital to have something set up for you. If you need electricity for some of your medical things, you just call the hospital. They will have a number to be able to redirect you. The worst thing to do is if you're told to go and you don't go and you stay, you're causing yourself so many issues that they will spend, let's say that maybe 1,000 people still stay. Well, it's going to take them about a week and a half to find those 1,000 people. So that's another whole week and a half they didn't have to look for them, and they could have already been on cleaning things up and assessing.
Terrific. That's great information. That's really great information. So is there anything else that you could share with the listeners?
I would just encourage them to check the blog, because we'll be having a lot more free conference phone calls, so probably maybe two or three on different days. And if you're in a shelter or if you are somewhere else at home possibly, or if you have other people who you can't find, or you just need to talk to somebody about all of this going on, I'll be available on that phone call, generally about 15 to 30 minutes. The phone number and the access code are listed on the website. If there's a lot of articles on the front page, just keep scrolling down. As soon as you find the telephone number and the access code, it never changes. It's always the same. The only thing that would change is the time. So just call it.
And on your website, Life Pockets, people can still view some of the pictures that you were fortunate to get of areas of New Orleans through the devastation, so that they can have a general idea.
Right. We'll be having a picture book up there. It'll be up there by Monday.
Terrific. That's great information. We greatly appreciate all of you who have tuned in to tonight's talk radio show. Please listen in and email Dr. J if you have any questions and for future upcoming shows. So we'd like to thank everybody again and hope that everybody has a very safe weekend and a very safe Memorial weekend. And those who are going through the storm, we hope that they make it through unscathed. Thank you and good night.